Well, like this morning, we sang tonight, and I guess the question is, why is that? There are many groups in the religious world that would have instrumental music. They just might have instrumental music. They might have singing with instrumental music. But why is it? Why is it that we sing? Is that simply just a tradition that we have? Or is there a Bible reason for that? I know some people might say, you know, what's the big deal? Are there not more important issues? Isn't God more concerned about other things or running the universe or things like that than to be really concerned about particularly how we worship Him? Is it really not a much of a big deal? Is it that God leaves it up to us to decide how to worship Him? And just as long as we do something from good intentions and good motives, that's all that matters. The problem with all those thoughts is when I read the Old Testament, I find the exact opposite of that. And the Old Testament is written for our learning, Romans 15, verse 4. It's not just dead history. It's not that it has no application for us. There are multiple times in the New Testament where the New Testament writer says that this stuff in the Old Testament happened to teach you something. Whether it's Romans 15 or 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I find in the Old Testament that when people messed with or altered or with worship, specifically worship, that God was not pleased. In the book of Leviticus chapter 10 is just one example of many. Verse 1, now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took their respective fire pans, and after putting fire in them, placed incense on it and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire comes out from the presence of the Lord and consumes them. And God says, those that will come near me will treat me as holy or treat me with respect. Same thing is true in 2 Samuel 6 that we'll take a look at a little later. If God was concerned with how the Ark of the Covenant was moved in the Old Testament, if God was concerned about who offered incense and where the fire came from, then it could be that God is concerned about a lot of other things as well, especially concerning what we do as far as music in our worship. In the book of Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse 19, the passage that we had when we started the service tonight, it says, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord. The word there is solo, and some have argued that the word making melody inherently includes either using the instrument or singing to the accompaniment of an instrument. That's often the argument that's made, that that's what the word means there, and that that authorizes instrumental music and worship. The problem with that is your lexicons are not going to agree with that point of view. Lexicons are like, here's Greek words defined. Here's what those Greek terms mean. And this is why the translators translated it that way. For example, Thayer says, in the New Testament, to sing a hymn, to celebrate the praise of God in song. Or Vine says, the notes in the New Testament, to sing a hymn, to sing praise. Thus, make melody or sing. It is never translated, sing to the accompaniment of an instrument. Other uses of solo in the New Testament are James 5:13, sing praise. Romans 5:9, sing. 1 Corinthians 14:15, sing. When solo is found in the New Testament, the translators never translated it playing or singing with an instrument. Obviously, the scholars that translated your King James, American Standard, New American Standard, NIV, all understood that solo simply means sing. One writer said, it must be a matter of some consternation to those who argue that solo necessarily includes the instrument, that virtually no standard translation of the English language provides a hint of instrumental music in any of the five texts where the verb is found in the New Testament. Or as one writer said, if God intended for us to use instrumental music in our worship, there is no English translation, no standard English translation, no generally accepted translation in the world from which God would be telling you that. Because all the translations are simply make melody or sing, and particularly make melody in your heart. If it is inherent, though, then it's not an option. Inherent means it's there. It's not an optional thing. Which would also mean that everyone must play, because whatever Ephesians 5:19 is teaching all of us to do it. Where it says speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, it does not say go and listen to other people sing in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. The passage is not commanding us to sit back and watch somebody else do this. The passage is commanding all of us to make melody in our hearts and all of us to sing. I know throughout my Christian life, now and then, I've run into members of the church who do not sing. And I don't think that's an option. It would be equally of a member of the church that simply does not pray, or a member of the church when the Lord's Supper is served does not partake on the first day of the week. I don't think that's something that you can just like, well, I'm not comfortable with singing, so I'm not going to sing. In the Old Testament, when God wanted the instrument, it was not left up to a guess. Psalm 98, verse 5 is one passage like that. Here's what it says. Sing praises to the Lord with the lyre. And that just impresses me in the Old Testament that instrumental music in the Old Testament was not a guess, a stab in the dark. Instrumental music in the Old Testament was a direct command, and it was made specific. Sing praises with the lyre. In like manner, Ephesians 5:19 is very specific. Sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Make the melody in your heart. I think it's equally specific. Also, it's made clear that one is to sing, not simply the generic, well, make music somehow. The melody is to be made in the heart, and I think if you're looking for an instrument in the verse, the instrument is the heart that is to be played. Now, God did authorize it in the Old Testament, and some people have made the argument that since God authorized it in the Old Testament, it is simply authorized today as well. If it pleased him then it must please him now. But just because God commanded something at one time in history does not mean that such a practice would always be commanded. To me, circumcision as a command is a good example of that. In the book of Genesis, circumcision is commanded of Abraham and his descendants. It was not an option. It was something that you did to obey God. But in the New Testament, to be circumcised to obey God, not for medical reasons or hygienic reasons or whatever, but I'm going to be circumcised to obey God, that actually cuts you off from God. And that's Galatians chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. God has changed various ordinances, even very prominent ones. I can't think of a more prominent ordinance in the Old Testament than circumcision or the Sabbath day observance. And yet, that has been changed. Sabbath day observance is not part of New Testament worship or Christianity. Neither is the temple, neither are animal sacrifices, neither is Passover or Pentecost or the other feasts, neither are the food laws of the Old Testament, neither is the priesthood of the Old Testament. Now, when God authorized it then, he authorized it with specific statements. It was not just left to the will of individuals. Well, here's what I want to do. It was sing with the lyre. It was use this, 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 and this. What does God specifically authorize in the New Testament? And it's sing. One argument I guess I've run into is that some say, well, the Psalms were not part of the law, therefore the Psalms, I guess the Psalms are kind of timeless teaching. They're kind of part of any covenant, that they were not part of the Mosaic law, that when the Mosaic law was removed, the Psalms were not part of that law, and so the Psalms are there as authority for us today. My problem with that is that in John 10, verse 34, Jesus quotes a psalm. And it's Psalm 82, verse 6. And he begins the quotation by saying, has it not been written in your law? And he's not quoting from Deuteronomy or Leviticus or Numbers or Exodus. He's quoting from Psalm 82, verse 6. Therefore, Jesus is saying that the Psalms are part of the law as well. In fact, to me, to argue that the Psalms are not part of the law in the Old Testament, wait a minute, it's the Psalms that have the longest section of praise for that law. Psalm 119, all 160 verses, is one verse after another extolling how great God's law is, and the law under consideration is the law given at Sinai with all the other commands that went with it. All right. It's interesting, though, when we talk about the Psalms, and the Psalms do have specific commands in the Old Testament to use the instrument, but when the Holy Spirit quotes Psalms in the New Testament, and those Psalms are music Psalms, they're always the singing psalms. And for example, Psalm 18 verse 49 is quoted in Romans 15 verse 9. And it says, I will sing to your name. Psalm 22 verse 22 is quoted in Hebrews 2 and verse 12. And there it says, I will sing your praise. That when the Holy Spirit in the New Testament goes back and picks out a psalm and quotes it, and that psalm had music in it, it's always a singing psalm that's quoted in your New Testament. Some have argued, well, harps are mentioned in the book of Revelation. Therefore, that authorizes them in the church. Harps in heaven. So it must be lawful here and now. Well, my problem with that is the book of Revelation that mentions a number of things. It mentions incense and all sorts of things that are not part of the worship of the New Testament church. In fact, the book of Revelation mentions a number of things from the Old Testament or the Mosaic Law. And yet clearly we know that that's not part of the New Covenant. Knowing that, but the assumption that whatever is in heaven is authorized in congregation worship here isn't true. That is what we do together here, or what we do in this life and what's in heaven, those are not interchangeable realms. And to me, some examples of that would be the Lord's Supper will not exist in heaven. 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is very specific. We will observe it until he comes. And when he comes, we will no longer observe it. Preaching the gospel to the lost will not exist in heaven. There's going to be no evangelism there. There are many things in heaven that do not exist here. Heaven's a place of no tears and no sorrow and no pain. All of that exists here. And there are many things in the local congregation that do not exist in heaven. One of them is, here in this life, marriage is authorized between a man and a woman. In heaven, there is no marriage. Marriage is not authorized there. That relationship simply does not exist. Even though I remember two Mormon missionaries one time said, after I had them read Matthew 22, verse 30, in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage. And they said, but wouldn't you want to be? And it's like, well, wait a minute. I mean, you're really telling me that you're going to stand before Jesus. And I know what you said there, but I would rather. And I think they're not realizing, wait a minute, Jesus is Lord. You don't tell Jesus to alter his law. Some have argued that instrumental music is just an aid, that it's simply there, that instrumental music is like a song book, it's like a song leader, that all instrumental music does is help us sing. That to me is, first of all, by the time that you've come to the aid argument, you've already had to give up some other arguments. If it's only an aid, then it's not inherent in the word. Instrument, singing to the accompaniment of an instrument cannot be the definition of solo if it's only an aid. I mean, you got to make your choice which argument you're going to camp on there. Not only that, but if you're arguing that it's just an aid, then we have to toss out the harps in Revelation. Okay, we got to kind of get rid of that if it's just an aid. Or that they were authorized in the Old Testament if they're just an aid. And so to me, when people say it's just an aid, it seems like at that point we are conceding that nowhere are they commanded and that the instrument does not inherently reside in the term solo once we've come to it's just an aid argument. That tells me that they're conceding it's not mentioned. It's not mentioned and we're just kind of like, but it helps. The Bible is very clear about things that are aids or expedients. In fact, the Bible talks about things, you might say, that fit into the category of an aid or an expedient. And the first rule about anything that would be an aid, that is something that's necessary to carry out a Bible command. Something that the Bible command authorizes. That is, when the Bible commands us to go into all the world, it's equally authorizing methods of going, whether a car, a plane, walking, that's what it's authorizing. When it authorizes us to teach the gospel, it's equally authorizing materials that we would use in teaching. When it tells us to sing, then it's equally authorized, well, we have to have something to sing, and so we need to have some sort of sheet music or a book, or a projection behind us, but we got to have something to sing. And so 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12 says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be mastered by anything. To be an aid or expedient, your category needs to be authorized first. And it's not instrumental music that's authorized in Ephesians 5:19. It's singing that is authorized if I really look at the command. The specific command is to sing. Make melody in the heart. An aid or expedient is a way of carrying out a command. Instrumental music is not needed to carry out the command to sing. I think that's clear. We sing tonight without any instrument. It's not needed to carry out the command. It is actually something in addition to the singing. As one writer said, if I'm commanded to walk, can I ride as an aid? A Bible example. Or before we get there. People tend to overlook the fact that the kind of music commanded in Ephesians 5:19 is very specific. When God specifically commanded singing, we cannot use another kind of music as an aid. Drumming is not singing. Stomping is not singing. Singing, it is its own specific category. For example, to me, an example of this is when God commanded the Ark of the Covenant to be carried by certain Levites. There were rings in the side and poles that went through those rings. Putting it on a new cart would move it. It did move it. But putting it on a new cart is not an aid. And I think that equally with instrumental music fits in that same category as the new cart. God wanted the Ark of the Covenant carried, and he made it very clear. He commanded that. He said in the book of Numbers, chapter 4, here's the people that carry it. He built it with poles that went to the side. That's a pretty good visual aid, how it's to be moved. He never talked anywhere about a new cart. And I think the same thing is true when we meet God at the judgment, and if we've been like, say, well, but we want a band and stuff like that, he's made it very clear. He would say, in the New Testament, Mark, when I talked about what sort of music I wanted, what did I say? Did I say just make music? And I would say, no. You said, sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs and make melody in your heart. He said, exactly. To me, that's just as obvious as the poles on the Ark of the Covenant of how it was to be carried. You know, it's interesting. The early church knew that instruments had been commanded in the Old Testament because they had the Old Testament. The early Christians knew the meaning of the term solo because many of them spoke Greek. It was not a dead language to them. It was the language that they spoke. The early church had funds, and so there's no issue like, well, they would have them, but they could not afford them. Early church spent funds on a number of things. The early church also, I think we would have to say, probably had members that could play them. Not only that, but instruments were not viewed as worldly. That's what some people argue. Well, you know, the early church kind of viewed the instruments as worldly. They weren't viewed as worldly because many of them, particularly those who had come from a Jewish background, grew up that when they went to the temple, part of the worship was instrumental music. They weren't viewed as worldly. I mean, God had commanded them in the Old Testament. And yet, they did not use them. Why? And I think that's a question that needs to be answered. They knew what solo meant. They know they'd been commanded in the Old Testament. They were available. They could afford them. They were not viewed as worldly. They were part of the temple worship. So why were they not used? And I think the reason went with everything else. The reason they were not used is because God commanded them to sing. They understood Ephesians chapter 5, verse 19, or Colossians 3:16. And if I love God, then I will honor his wishes. Now, some people have argued that congregational singing is not authorized. I run into people like this, and typically the reason the argument has popped up is that it kind of goes like, well, yeah, instrumental music's not authorized, but neither is congregational singing, and we're doing that. Since we're already doing something that's not authorized, it's okay to do something else that's not authorized. And that's kind of the way that's argued. And yet, I don't know why people get the idea that congregational singing is not authorized. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 26. What is the outcome then, brethren, when you assemble? Each one has a psalm, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. Ephesians 5:19, speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Speaking to one another, that's collective. I can't obey that command by myself. I have to be with other Christians in order to obey that command. And then in the book of Hebrews chapter 2 and in verse 12, I will proclaim your name to my brethren. In the midst of the congregation, I will sing your praise. All right. Colossians 3:16 is also where it says teaching and admonishing one another. That demands a context of where there's other believers present. And as I'm singing, that singing is a form of teaching and encouraging my brethren, and they're teaching and encouraging me with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Once a person starts justifying instrumental music on the basis of your supposedly unauthorized practice allows my unauthorized practice, they've just conceded. By the time that you get to, well, congregational music, congregational singing is not authorized. I think by the time you get to that argument, you've had to concede there is no command, there is no example, and there is no necessary inference available in any New Testament verse that would justify it. I think that that's what you're conceding at that point in that argument. What if Chris Breland shows up? Chris Breland shows up, and he's kind of upset. Chris Breland has entered this mode that no one is listening to him anymore. He goes to a burger restaurant. You know, big burger. You know, not a whole lot of different stuff on it, just meat and cheese and stuff, a few vegetables. And they bring him out the fufu burger instead, which is like some tofu back black bean thing with like a slice of brie cheese and rose petals on the top. And they say, this is what, we're not going to charge you anything extra, but just this is just what we thought you'd like more. And then he said, I'm going to go out to breakfast. I'm going out to Shirley's Tippy Canoe out in Troutdale and get me a big plate of biscuits and gravy and a side of flapjacks and etc. And they bring him back like the Rudy Tooty Pirate Jack kid's breakfast with a little thing of applesauce, one little pancake that's made, you know, has ears on it or whatever, and a couple of chocolate chips and Skittles for a smile and one little sausage that they put toothpicks in it to look like a little animal on the side of his plate, you know, and he's going like, what's that? And they said, well, that's what we think you would like better. I mean, and then he comes here, like, looking differently. Missy's not listening to him, and so she has him wearing, like, skinny jeans and stuff from H&M and, you know, a little derby and a plaid vest and red Converse high tops. And Chris, what's going on? It's just no one's listening to me. I put an order in and I get something else. Just no one listens to me anymore. You know, that's a little bit, unfortunately, what happens to God. Is God says sing, and no one listens to him. You know, with good intentions, you hire someone to paint your house. And what if they painted a color you don't want it? We're not going to charge you extra, Gail. But turquoise, we thought turquoise is what you'd like on your house. I mean, would you be happy with that? You order an appliance, and here comes the appliance from Sears, and it's not at all the appliance that you wanted, but there you go. You go into the Beaver and Toyota, you buy a car, the car pulls up all washed. It's not the model you want, but hey, we thought that's what you would want, like more. That would be very frustrating if no one paid attention to any of your orders. If people kept ignoring your specific requests. And maybe we know a little bit how God feels. God says, sing to one another psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Make melody in your heart. And if that's what he wants, then that's what I'll give him. And that's kind of some reasoning tonight of why we don't use it, because we can't find a command, an example, or even a necessary inference in the New Testament that would indicate that's what God wants. But God has been very clear what he does want. He wants us to sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. And I guess if we're going to be followers of Christ, we're going to honor his wishes. We're followers of Christ. We need to make sure that we don't become followers of what we desire. As far as the plan of salvation, God has made his will very clear there too. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. And so that's what we're going to preach and practice as well. Let's be standing and singing the invitation song.
There is a place of God.